Diabetic Fee does not supply clinical treatment information or medical advice and should never be used as a substitute for personal medical care. If you are in need of qualified medical information or need emergency assistance, we strongly recommend that you contact your medical team. Opinions expressed on Diabetic Fee by guests do not necessarily reflect those of the Diabetic Fee staff. Welcome to Diabetic Feed for the week of May 31st, 2010. I'm Christelle Marchand. Diabetic Feed introduces you to the latest news, information, and people that make an impact in the diabetic community. Whether you're a diabetic, know someone with diabetes, or are just curious to learn more about a disease that affects over 21 million people in the U.S. alone, we hope that you'll hear something new. This is our first podcast in 4 years, and we'd like to thank those who have contacted us to inquire about Diabetic Feed. We're back, and while this week we're offering just a news segment, we'll also begin our interviews and information segments in upcoming episodes. We hope that you'll continue to listen. Let's get straight to it. This week, Danish pharmaceutical group Novo Nordisk stated it was pulling 17 types of medication for treating diabetes from the Greek market, citing financial reasons following a government decree to lower price of drugs. According to Mike Rulisk, Novo Nordisk's head of corporate communications, quote, "The products that are pulled from the market are the latest generation of insulin products in the pen system." Rulisk explained that if they followed the decree by reducing the cost of these products by 25%, as the decree dictates, operations in Greece would become loss-making. Quote, "The financial consequences for the company would be very significant," he said, adding, "A price lowering of this magnitude in Greece would automatically trigger price reductions in other countries." The Greek government is currently in an economic crisis and issued the decree on May 3rd. Novo Nordisk claims that this caused a 25% reduction in the price of the drugs they currently offer in Greece. The company, which is the world's largest producer of insulin, said it will not stop selling the 17 products, but insists on keeping their original pricing structure. Novo Nordisk has, however, agreed to the price cut on its standard human insulin products, which 40,000 Greek diabetic patients currently use. These products are vial-based, rather than the popular pen devices. Glucagon, produced by Novo Nordisk, will be made available at no charge to diabetic patients in Greece. However, Rulis conceded that approximately 50,000 diabetics in Greece use the new generation products that the company will pull from the market. For those patients who are at high risk for cardiovascular disease, low-dose aspirin therapy is a reasonable approach to prevent a first heart attack, otherwise known as a myocardial infarction. This joint recommendation was released last week by the American Diabetes Association, American College of Cardiology, and the American Heart Association. Based on the guidelines set by these associations, patients who are most men aged 50 or older and most women aged 60 or older with neither excess bleeding or additional cardiovascular risks should begin low-dose aspirin therapy. According to Dr. Michael Pignoni, chief of the General Medicine Division and professor of medicine at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, quote, "We felt that the benefits were likely to exceed the downsides, such as gastrointestinal bleeding, for the groups mentioned. There will be some younger people with sufficient risk to warrant aspirin, but many who are not at sufficient risk." In 2007, the ADA and HDA issued a joint recommendation for low-dose aspirin therapy for men and women aged 40 years and older with a major history of risk factor for CVD, such as family history, hypertension, smoking, high cholesterol, and kidney disease. This new recommendation expands low-dose aspirin therapy to a wider group. "The new recommendations only address primary prevention," said Craig Williams, Associate Professor of Pharmacy and Medicine at Oregon Health Services University in Portland. All three organizations continue to strongly recommend low-dose aspirin for all patients who have previously had a heart attack or stroke, so-called secondary prevention. For the recommended target group, those with the highest cardiovascular risk should experience the greatest benefits, according to the statement. However, the use of aspirin therapy depends on the use of other treatments, such as cholesterol-lowering medications, blood pressure control, and smoking cessation. Overall, data suggests that the aspirin moderately reduces cardiovascular risk. However, more research is needed to better define the specific effects of aspirin on diabetes. Of interesting note is who the recommendation does not cover. Men younger than 50 years and women younger than 60 years with diabetes and no major additional cardiovascular risk factors. Researchers believe the potential adverse events from gastrointestinal bleeding offset potential benefits of treatment. It's estimated that as many as 1 in 5 excess events occur per 1,000 patients per year, including intracranial bleeding. Last week, Italian scientists reported that they have found a significant link between type 1 diabetes, also known as juvenile diabetes, and a common virus that usually only causes a mild infection, a discovery that may give clues as to what triggers the disease. In a small study of 112 type 1 children, Antonio Toniolo of the University of Insubria in Varese, Italy, found that more than 80% had evidence of enterovirus infection in their blood. Enteroviruses are viruses that can thrive in the gastrointestinal tract. Results did not show a causal link between enteroviruses and diabetes, but that the discovery was consistent with previous studies, which have suggested enterovirus infections may be associated with diabetes. Toniolo stated, infection by different enteroviruses may be linked to the early stages of diabetes. Toniolo and colleagues tested the blood of 112 children aged between 2 and 16 years at the time they were diagnosed with type 1 diabetes to see if it contained enteroviral DNA. The scientists compared those samples with that of children without diabetes. They found low-level enteroviral infectivity in 83% of the samples of diabetic patients, compared with only 7% of children with no diabetes. The study results were presented at a conference of the American Society for Microbiology in San Diego, California. Toniolo stated, the high prevalence of enteroviral genome sequences in newly diagnosed type 1 diabetes cases indicate that different enterovirus types represent a significant biomarker of early-stage juvenile diabetes. Toniolo added that if similar results were found in studies of patients in other geographic areas, it would suggest that detecting enteroviruses early may help researchers find other environmental factors that lead to type 1 diabetes. Patients treated over long periods with metformin, also known as glucophage, a common drug for diabetes, are at risk of developing vitamin B12 deficiency, which is also likely to get worse over time, according to a study published this week. Vitamin B12 is essential to maintain healthy nerve cells and red blood cells. It's found in meat, dairy products, eggs, fish, shellfish, and fortified breakfast cereals, and it can also be taken as a supplement. Symptoms of B12 deficiency include fatigue, mental changes, anemia, and nerve damage known as neuropathy. Cohen Stehauer of Maastricht University Medical Center in the Netherlands, whose study was published in the British Medical Journal, said these symptoms can easily be misdiagnosed as being due to diabetes and its complications, or to aging, he said, but checking B12 levels could help doctors to assess the real cause and treat it if it was found to be B12 deficiency. Dutch scientists who carried out the study said the findings suggest that regular checking of vitamin B12 levels during long-term metformin treatment should be strongly considered to try to prevent deficiency and its effects. Stehauer's team studied 390 patients with type 2 diabetes, giving metformin to 196 of them 3 times a day for more than 4 years, and a placebo, or dummy pill, to the other 194. They found that people who had taken the metformin had a 19% reduction in their vitamin B12 levels compared with people who had taken a placebo who had almost no B12 change. The reduced levels of vitamin B12 in the metformin group also persisted and became more apparent over time. Stehauer wrote, "Our studies show that it is reasonable to assume harm will eventually occur in some patients with metformin-induced low vitamin B12 levels." That's it for this week's edition of Diabetic Feed. For more information about these articles and more, please visit our website located at www.thediabeticfeed.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Diabetic Feed or join our fan page on Facebook. Just type Diabetic Feed into the search box and join in on the conversation. We'll continue to share the latest news and information in between podcasts. We know that a strong diabetic community is important, especially when you need to reach out for emotional support. This Diabetic Feed podcast is just one way to help ensure that you're getting the latest information about diabetes, but we want to provide you with topics and news that you want to hear. If you have a tip that you want to recommend, a news article that you'd like to share, or a comment on anything that you've heard, please email us at diabeticfeed@gmail.com. Thanks go out to my partner and producer, John Aprigliano. Join us at Diabetic Feed for the latest news and information about diabetes. Until then, have a healthy week.